What is up, everyone? And boy, oh boy, we've been off for a minute, but we have a special episode for you today. We have returning guests. Eric's here, obviously co-anchoring the showdown, but good Lord, Mr. Fucking Smith has graced us with his presence, and we got fucking the one Mr. Charles Laux, aka Charlie, here to discuss 1989's Kickboxer. Charlie was on for 1988's Bloodsport with Jean-Claude Van Damme. Lou has just been on the last few episodes as well, talking Out for Justice with Seagal and the Maniac Cop franchise. So we're hot, we're bothered, we're ready to go. And if we were in a theater, our hands would be fucking buttered, and we're ready to fucking go for our discussion today on 1989's Kickboxer. Now, gentlemen, as we kick this off, I have to preface this by saying that this is a top five film for me. I grew up with this film. I grew up with the VHS. It's one I've watched over and over again, and endlessly. And Eric, I know you have too, but Lou, this was a first time watch for you, correct?
That is absolutely correct. First time watch, went and got the steelbook from
You did
Walmart.
get
I
the
was
steelbook, yes.
I did. Yeah, I did end up nabbing it. I didn't get a chance to get in the extra features. I know for a fact after we get off this call, you know, there's like fucking basketball and baseball and shit tonight, but I know I'm gonna be digging into that because I'm very curious to see what they packed in there. But yeah, dude, this I wasn't I know you and I have had asides about this, but I guess for Charlie and I know ET and I we were talking about it last episode, but I was of the ilk. My upbringing through like action, mixed martial arts was I was in the Seagal camp because my father and I believe you had said it was kind of the same with yours, except JCVD with Satch. So I'd watched some Jean-Claude movies, but definitely not as many. I was way more exposed to the Seagal filmography. So this was awesome. I did not know what to expect going into it, other than it was about kickboxing and it took place in Thailand. That was pretty much the bare min as far as I knew. And let's just say I was very happy. I was very happy A that I purchased it and didn't fucking stream it because the rewatchability on this is insane. But there's all sorts of great shit that, you know, I'm seeing it for the first time. I'm like, how have I not fucking seen this yet? Like Bloodsport is I feel like Bloodsport is always the go-to or Time Cop, but I feel like Bloodsport is like I don't know. That was just the one I gravitated to, and this wasn't so far removed from Bloodsport. Dude, it felt like that arena was the same exact soundstage from Bloodsport that they shot Kickboxer. I swear to God, like I was just getting all sorts. It was all hazy and torches and shit. But anyway, this was a great watch. So thank you for having me on to talk about this because I was fucking blown away.
Well, it's always nice to get new eyes, and you can watch baseball or basketball tonight because there's absolutely no special features except for trailers of other movies on the special features of this. Unfortunately, they released a bare bones DVD, or they did. Lionsgate put out a DVD in 2007, and then the Blu-ray came out in 2009. No special features on either. This is a new disc, though, that is in the Walmart exclusive steelbook if anybody wants to pick it up. New artwork on the outside, traditional poster on the inside when you open it up. But the disc is new because it has an interactive menu, and I compared it today because that's just the kind of person I am. The disc is new and it is cleaned up. I would assume a 2K scan, a new scan of the film. It is cleaner than the last Blu-ray release from 2009. So it is the most updated version of Kickboxer you can find. Yeah, so we got the physical media portion of this out, and we are all owners of this film, so that is that's a good thing. Now, Charlie, before we get to Eric, because I know Eric's history with it, but he's gonna tell the crowd here. But Charlie, what was your first experience seeing Kickboxer?
My first time seeing Kickboxer was actually off of a recommendation from you after watching Bloodsport because I had
Yeah.
not seen it yet.
Bloodsport seems to be the go, and Lou, you can attest this. Eric, you can too. I grew up in the kickboxer camp, but Bloodsport seems like it's the go-to juggernaut Van Damme film that everyone like. It's the instant, like when you say Arnold, you say the Terminator. Like, you say Bloodsport for Jean-Claude.
That's recognition.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. 100%.
Not taking anything away from Kickboxer, because I prefer, spoiler alert, I prefer Kickboxer over Bloodsport and over every Jean-Claude Van Damme film. But, so when you first... when you first watch it, so we got a couple years under this then, right? At least minimum, yeah. Right? Eric, what about you? I'm pretty sure I know that you saw this at the young age as I did, but let the audience hear it. Where'd you first, when did it come into your orbit?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as I've said before, and you know, my father watched a lot of like this, you know, action, you know, Arnold and Stallone and Seagal and JCVD. So movies like Bloodsport and Kickboxer always found their way on the television at home. Usually it's from just being on cable somewhere, because my father literally, I don't think, ever owned a VHS or a DVD in his life. But there was none of those in my house until my brother and I started buying them. But yeah, I mean, this movie, I just recall just being on the television as a kid. And like you said, Bloodsport was definitely my first introduction to Jean-Claude. And then, you know, Kickboxer right after. And I think, just like you said, I mean, I know you said Kickboxer is your go-to, but I think most people, myself included, feel like Bloodsport's the one, and then Kickboxer's right there in second place. So, yeah, just something that was constantly on television in my house growing up. So,
yeah, as we talked about on the Out for Justice episode, there's nothing like male bonding with a father figure watching other muscled men do dangerous and illegal shit, and or just straight up fighting. There's not much more that can connect you with another male. As we said, these are movies, most of the time, not to be stereotypical, you don't watch with females. Females have no interest in these. Why is it that the men have some kind of vested interest in the oiled up guys doing splits and twerking in a fucking little Bangkok bar? I don't know why it's us, but I guess I'm glad it is. But regardless, so yeah, same thing with me. I can't remember a time where this wasn't in my orbit. I remember having it recorded off, you know, HBO or Cinemax or Showtime or whatever it was onto a blank VHS tape. And I had that for years. I remember the spine of it with the, you know, a black Sharpie written out Kickboxer on it. Remember it vividly. And this was, I didn't see Bloodsport until a few years after I was, you know, a diehard film fan at whatever age it was. Like I said, I can't pinpoint it, and I'm not going to be like, hey, I was four, like, because it could have been six for all I remember. But I don't remember a time where it wasn't in my orbit. Like this, Full Metal Jacket, like Night of Living Dead, like there's like five to like seven films, Lost Boys, Pet Sematary, that I don't remember not being in my orbit. So this was in my orbit until, you know, I was obsessed with my Kickboxer recorded VHS. Then I found Bloodsport by my uncle or my father being like, yeah, Bloodsport, like we got to watch Bloodsport, and then seeing Bloodsport, loving Bloodsport. But Kickboxer was the first true love for Jean-Claude Van Damme. But this, like I said, this is, as you said, Eric, it seems like it hitches itself as the number two in Jean-Claude's catalog for most. But for me, it's number one. But regardless, I think we can all agree this is one hell of a film, boys. So we're going to dive right the fuck into it. So we open up, we get the credit, Jean-Claude Van Damme credit. We get Kickboxer, the little bell ring. And we see his brother, Eric the Eliminator Sloan, is a world champion kickboxer. So, world champion, obviously just got the slickest fucking curly Jerry Curl mullet you ever saw in your life.
About his
80s. Well, he has an amazing look, yeah.
So
amazing.
This guy is everything that I would have been if I was 6 inches taller, had you know, 98% less body fat, and... Yep. And just had a bad attitude and just had a terrible, you know, bickering, divorced upbringing. But this is, we open up in the ring. He's got a title defense, and we see that his brother, Jean-Claude Van Damme, who was European, was raised in
Belgium.
Belgium. Mm-hmm. And He is Belgian, for the audience. He was known as the Muscles from Brussels, which a nickname which Jean-Claude hated. And Jean-Claude is a legitimate kickboxer, was a legitimate kickboxing champion too. But this, is there anything to have a Jerry curl and a mullet, to have that is to be confident.
Right. Wasn't that dude, the actor, wasn't he like a legit kickboxer as well? The guy who played his brother?
He most certainly was. Alex, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. Exaria, hold on. I'll pull it
that
up.
That motherfucker, I had to look it up too because I was like, I swear to God, fucking Eddie Guerrero stole this dude's look his entire fucking professional wrestling.
The mustache
career.
Too in the 90s.
Yes.
He's got a WCW. Dude.
He does look like WCW era Guerrero for sure. That's
Dennis, Dennis Alexio.
Alexio, huh?
Is considered,
he was legit.
Dude, this is what it says on his IMDb. Dennis the Terminator, not the Eliminator. Dennis the Terminator Alexio is considered one of, if not the greatest, heavyweight kickboxing champion in the sport's history. I don't know if him or his agent wrote this, but but I mean, I did hear that he was a great world champion. His record is an outstanding. Okay, you know, this dude's legit. I could shut the fuck up because he's going to resurrect the Jerry curl and kick the shit out of me. he has an outstanding record of 70-2 with 65 wins by way of knockout.
That's insane.
So developed a strong friendship with Jean-Claude Van Damme. And the two made the highly popular, successful film Kickboxer together. Alexio retired from fighting, but appears in many functions of both film and the martial arts communities. So I knew this dude was a legit kickboxer. I did not know that he was 70-2 with 65 fucking knockouts. So a legit motherfucker, to say the least.
Yeah. He would definitely handed out his fair share of fucking CTE to whoever's on the receiving end of those KOs.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Surprising he would take a role where he would lose so quickly.
Yeah.
Right. Get pretty much killed, too. Yeah.
Well, all that for Hollywood stardom and a formidable opponent and villain as Tong Po. But we got to talk about right off the bat, boys. The score, Paul Herzog's synth like score for this is amazing, which also is paired with three Stan Bush songs. The first we get after Eric, the Eliminator Sloan. Brother to Kurt Sloan, played by Jean-Claude Van Damme, beats his opponent with little to no effort. And, you know, they ask him, are you good? Do you have any plans to go to Thailand, to Bangkok, and defend the title there? And he pretty much says, you know, Thailand, Bangkok, wherever. He's like, I'm kicking ass wherever I go. Cue the fucking music. Can we talk about, now everyone needs to get in on this because I want everybody's opinion. Is there a film with better montages than Kickboxer? Streets of Cyan by Stan Bush playing, and we get the boat ride into Bangkok, the hooker bars, the peep show places. It's showing the life of a champion, boys.
Everybody loves a winner.
Everybody loves a winner.
I think the only one that might be right up there with it, honestly, is Out for Justice and fucking No Sleep Till Brooklyn. No Sleep Till Brooklyn fucking montage where he's poking around the dry docks of New York City looking for homeboy. Like,
some good ones for sure.
Yeah.
No, even Bloodsport, when he's on the train in Bloodsport, mm-hmm. That's another good one too.
Do you think so? These are different directors too. Do you think like when someone is it direction from Van Damme where he's just like, you have to have a killer montage. Without a killer montage, the movie is nothing.
Like, there's no movie. There's no movie without the killer montage. That's basically that's what I would gather from that for sure. Because is that like that's a period thing, right?
It's definitely
like,
80s.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. There's a lot of classic ones, but yeah, I feel like it's part of the what I'm looking for here, the structure of every film in that genre. You need that montage.
Rocky IV, obviously the iconic beach montage and the fighting montage leading up when he's in Russia in the snow in the woods. But we see him, you know, they're cruising around, they're getting tail at prostitution sites, as it was legal in Thailand at the time. I don't know if it is now. But there's a lot of sex workers, bless their hearts, in Thailand, apparently, at least in 89 there was. But we see that, you know, she doesn't want his wallet. She just wants to make it with the champ. But we get the training portion of them training in the park is hilarious because, again, this is a period piece. So at the time, it didn't sound any alarms. But there is just something about 80s fashion that is just perfect. Eric's wearing, like, the surf Quicksilver surf shorts and a fucking Gold's Gym stringer. I mean, even if he wasn't a legitimate world famous kickboxer, he immediately looks like the ultimate badass with the hair, mustache, the wardrobe. And that's when you get the backstory on the brothers. He was Jean-Claude Van Damme's character, raised in Europe, over in Belgium, and obviously Eric Sloan raised by his father. You know, Jean-Claude's more elegant, has taken ballet, is obviously, as everyone wrote Jean-Claude off at the time, was a pretty boy, not knowing that he was a legit badass himself. So he's playing into that. Amazing. And you're seeing, like, okay, so Jean-Claude Van Damme's character isn't exactly, he knows some stuff, but he's not on his brother's level. His brother's showing him, you know, how powerful his kicks are and shit. Telling him to stop doing the tip-tap shit. And then we get, of course, his big competition. He gets hoisted to Tong Po. That's the fight. That's the heavyweight bout. So, initial thoughts, Lou, especially you as a first-time watcher, first thoughts of Tong Po when you see him?
Dude. Okay, I have so many questions. So that has to
be, got answers.
That has to be one of the most terrifying, odd looking creatures to grace film at that given time. Because I feel like if we couldn't have, like, in Bloodsport, it's like, all right, your enemies are varying, right? You have contestants from all of the world who enter into the Kumite. So it's like you get this wide breadth of different types of characters. But seeing Tong Po in the ring for the first time with whatever the fuck hair that is and whatever he had on his head before the fight, like when he was kind of like juicing up his chi and shit, like I was taken aback, like the draw on tattoos or whatever. I was like, this is a fucking villain. And you couldn't have done it any better at that point in time to really state this guy is a bad guy. Like he even looks like he looks like he stinks. You know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah, he's musty.
He smells. And like when you can pick up on that shit on screen, it's like, yeah, this guy's badass. He's a bad guy. He's just a fucking kick my head clean off my shoulders. No, dude, that entrance of that whole introduction to him, his character, obviously set the scene for what was going to happen. Because the best part of that opening sequence when we meet him and the fight occurs is afterwards when he kicks fucking Jean-Claude, who comes on stage to try and help his brother, proceeds to rip the belt in half. Like it was just the most chaotic set of like happenings that would occur at that point in time. I was like, this is insane. Yeah, dude, I was blown away by that first taste of Tong Po. That was nuts, dude.
So they introduced him perfectly, kicking the fucking pillar backstage as he's mm-hmm. as Jean-Claude's going to get ice for Eric. And he's kicking the fucking pillar that's the foundation of the fucking Coliseum that they're in. And he's just fucking kicking it. And he gives them the, like, fucking break things. The, like, break hands things. But here's something. I remember reading this, and I never really thought it was... I was just like, I wonder if that's true. I did a little deep dive, but found a Jean-Claude Van Damme interview. This... You want to know why Tong Po looks the way he does? It's makeup. And I knew that. But I didn't know how it was makeup. Now, you ready if you get your minds fucking blown? So, yeah. The dude who plays Tong Po is Michel Kissy. So, that dude was friends with Jean-Claude. The producers did not want him to be the villain because he's Arabic. He was from Morocco.
Oh.
And didn't want him in the movie because the producer said he didn't like working with Arabs.
Oof.
So... Michelle Kissy and Jake and Jean-Claude Van Damme were friends. And Jean-Claude really wanted him in the movie. Jean-Claude, who did acting in The Predator and was in the Predator suit and had the whole suit built for him initially before it was built for Peter Michael Hall, he's friends with Stan Winston. Stan Winston put makeup on Michelle Kissy and sent him, and he went the whole flight over to Bangkok in the makeup to go impress the producers so they could see him in the role.
Wow.
And that's Stan Winston of Terminator fame, of Pumpkinhead fame, who did the makeup for Tong Po to sell the producers to him, or sell the him to the producers.
So
awesome.
The even the best makeup jobs can win over the most hardened racist producers. I love it.
The most biggest piece of shit fucking assholes ever can be swayed by one legendary Stan Winston.
Yeah,
I will say I'm pretty happy that it played out like that. Not about the racism part, of course, but I just mean like because the Tong Po's look in this film, like, is so like he's so creepy and
there's I don't think that would have come.
Like, I know what that actor looked like because he's in Bloodsport as well, but I don't think it would have had the same weight if he just was just like, you know, no prosthetic or whatever makeup he had on his face there. So,
and it literally, he accepted him into the movie after it, but he flew all the way to Thailand in the Tong Po makeup.
That's amazing.
How fucking frightened were those fucking 106-pound stewardesses when they saw him walk in there? If he went straight method and fucking just was in Tong Po character on the flight, can you imagine being on that flight and having that story?
He just fucking scissor kicked one of the fucking attendants after he got off. Yeah.
He's mean mugging everyone that gets up to use the shitter during the flight because that's like a fucking wicked long flight.
But his entrance into the film is like, it's like legit scary. Just like you're in the shady, almost like fighting venue. Your brother sent you to go get some ice. You're walking down the hall. You just see some dude in this dark room just kicking a fucking pillar. The whole room shaking.
Now, Chong Li in Bloodsport is a great villain and a big badass dude, especially being that muscular in that tournament, was bigger, hands and head and shoulders bigger than anybody in that tournament. So he was scary in that way. But there's something about the Tong Po character that's just straight fucking evil.
Yeah.
Looks savage.
Yeah, looks straight savage.
Well, wasn't that one of the lines that he gave to Jean-Claude where he's like, he's a killer. Like, Tong Po's I think he said a murderer, a killer or something. Like, he's not just a fighter, he's a murderer or a killer. So it's like, on top of all of this, like, lore that's being built behind him when he's on screen, it's like, even the other characters, like, yeah, this guy he's not just a fighter. This guy's fucking evil. He will, you know, fucking harm little animals and, you know, all that shit. So, yeah, they couldn't have done it better. Iconic, I think, you could almost say, too, when it's like, all right, with movies of this time frame, especially like 80s action movies, it's like, what stands out? It's like, well, obviously the lead character, whatever set of boobies are in there. And then it's like, what's the villain? Exactly. And it's like, the big bad is Tong Po. It's like, yeah, I'm not going to forget that fucking face. You know what I mean? And set of hair, lock of hair, single lock of hair, whatever the fuck that was. I mean, you're not forgetting that. They did Stan Winston. Cheers, you know, like, fucking fantastic.
So Kurt urges Eric to not fight because he saw him obviously kicking the pillar, and he knew immediately, like, this bro is on another level. And he little did he know what another level he was going to be at. Urges him not to fight. Fight goes on. Before the bell even rings, Tong Po's gunning for him. And is just working the piss. And I didn't think, you don't think about these things until we're going to sit down with the four of us and talk about it. But at that first round where Tong Po is just throwing the fucking knees and breaking his ribs, think about that. He ends up paralyzing him from the waist down, but he definitely broke his ribs because he worked his ribs with knees. So can you imagine some ugly motherfucker like Tong Po breaking or damaging your spine so you're broken and you can't feel anything from the waist down, but you can still feel all your broken ribs that he gave you. Think about that's not even insult to injury. That's like insult to like ending the lower part of your body's life. And like, not only are I'm not going to let you off easy where you're not going to be able to feel anything from the waist down, I'm going to break your fucking ribs before I do that. So when you're recovering, you could still feel all your ribs broken on top of not being able to feel your dick. That's dude, dark. Evil. That shit's evil. Dark. Evil. Our boy Dog Poe is dark as fuck.
Just end my life. Yeah. Just end my life.
So Tong Po fucking drops the elbow on him. And it's over. Breaks his spine. And obviously, I don't know why. It shouldn't make me laugh. But when Jean-Claude's going, "Hey, asshole!" And then Tong Po just fucking kicks him.
So funny.
And yeah, the fight's over. He tears the fucking belt in half. And then we get our quick brief introduction at first to the fun guy of the movie, Winston Taylor.
Who is so awesome.
An ex-Marine. And you know, he asked him, he's like, "I gotta get him to a hospital." Still two more fights. So Freddie Lee, as we were introduced to in a little bit, is the one of the crime bosses in Thailand, and at least the number two that we find out at least. And they leave Eric Sloan out in the street just to die. Like, so they're all dark, devious dogs. So, and then we get, he gets left in the street, and then Winston Taylor shows up in a great fucking vehicle. I have loved this vehicle forever. The fucking Mazda Bongo van. This fucking thing, and then with the beaded seat cover, tell me that isn't... Yeah. There's no way he wasn't... Of course, he smokes cigars. He probably chews Copenhagen. He has an obsession with hookers. Like, this man is living the life of 10 retired kings.
I like the fact that his backstory too is like he's an ex-Marine who also dealt basically anything he could get his hands on, but it ranged from like fucking grenades, firearms, and like tanks and shit.
Yeah.
But there's always the best part about that whole line when they're sitting and drinking, when he's like, later on when, you know, he ends up picking him up and helping him and stuff. But he's like, "Why are you helping me?" or whatever. He's like, "I had a friend once in Vietnam." It's like, there's always a friend in Vietnam that they didn't listen to and help, and they fucking died, and it changed this person's life because A, that war was so fucked, but B, it's just such like, I don't want to say like a staple backstory for like current times, like you're dealing with somebody who was in the military, but there's always that like, there's always the dude who is in the armed forces who has regret about something terrible that happened during that war. So it was such a great setup for him, because there's so many moments in this movie that are very like, okay, we're like the bonker shit that we were talking about that occurred in the ring after fucking Eddie Guerrero had his back broken. Like that was chaos. That whole scene was just straight chaos.
Yeah.
And then, as you said, to leave him out in the street. So to have a character like that, that kind of, I don't want to say grounds it, but he's also fucking nuts himself. So it's like, right. I every moment he was on screen, it was just like, oh, what is going to come out of his mouth? Because you'd be like, what the fuck? He can't, just some of his ways, you'd be like, fuck that. Like, I don't know if he's going to fucking help you or whatever. Like, dude, so fucking great.
That's what's great too. Like, he tells him, like, I'm not signing your death warrant too. The best part though is when Jean-Claude, we get another montage of Jean-Claude just walking the streets of Bangkok, going into the gym, trying to like get someone to fight Tong Po. And all the like little Muay Thai kids are laughing at him, because they're like, "Yeah, this fucking white boy wants to fight Tong Po. Yeah, okay." And then Taylor finds him. "I might know someone who could train you." And then he's just like, "Oh, you have to take him to me. Now you have to take me to him now." He's like, "Oh, fuck now. We going drinking now." Just, and of course, like, that's the caveat. Like, yeah, I'll take you, but you gotta go get drunk with me at a fucking bar. Mind you, he drinks Perry. He tells Jean-Claude to drink Perrier. So Jean-Claude's just drinking Bangkok Perrier. And we get the war story, of course. That's the thing. And I was talking to Charlie about this earlier, is they kind of write these movies off as like, oh, there's no story. There's actually a really good story in this one. There is like a pretty decent story. Arguably a better story than Bloodsport, where they're just like, yeah, there's a fucking tournament. Check it out. Look at this fucking sword my fucking adoptive father had.
The story of the arms dealer dealing with the local mob problem.
Yeah, we have a warlord that is 100%. It had to have been like, they're just like, they told that guy, like, listen, you're like the Bangkok Kim Jong-un. or ill at the time. But yeah, so Winston's like, oh yeah, when they walk into the strip club and he's just like, I thought you said this was a con place. He's like, this is. But also, he names off the other
bars that he goes funny.
To. He's like, do you want to go to the Pink Pussy or the Kitten Caddy Club? So he's obviously a regular. He's a card-carrying member of all these establishments. Has tried chicken wings at every place.
Like, he was a good comedic, you know, entrance into the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you needed this after we had Tong Po.
Yeah, I like when they sat down to order drinks. And you're absolutely correct. He's a card-carrying member because he literally says, I'll have my regular or my usual or whatever. Yep. So they know that fucking cigar-smoking, bead seat-covered fucking van from a mile of goddamn way. So, no, that was the film needed that. They needed to have, like, that character who brings a little levity into how dark the story actually is.
And then he brings them to Zian's to train him, and he gets hooked up in the little rope gimmick and gets lifted up. And I like how Jean-Claude has a European accent, and they're like, in the direction in the film, they're like, just pretend he's 100% American. He's from Chicago, because he's the first thing Zian says to him, he goes, you're American? Nope, he's not American, but we'll roll with it. But this is Kurt plotting revenge, and then has to prove himself. And he goes on a food run for Zian, and fucks up Freddie Lee's boys at Ma Lee's store, who is his niece, right? Isn't it? It's his niece, right?
Yeah, what's his niece?
Yep. And so again, 80s movie, you got your comedic, you know, strip club going wisecracker, you got a nom story. You got revenge, and you get the love connection here with Molly.
Mm-hmm.
And he tunes Freddie Lee's boys up for trying to take Molly's money. And then, you know, he proves himself enough that Zian's going to start training him. And we get arguably the sickest training montages in all of cinema. Boys, take it over. What do we think of these? The training montages at Stone City and fucking Eagle. Nothing more American than a man from Brussels in Bangkok and an eagle just fucking soaring as you're sweating in the sun. Raining, the red sun is just beating on your head.
Some of the primitive styles of training in this were amazing. Getting tied up to the bamboo and shit like that.
Yeah, just stretched.
Just wild.
And the full culmination of his training is from not being able to do a full split to being able to do one with ease.
That's and not just do them, but actually twerk in a bar while dropping it low.
The montage is great too, because it's like, so you said it's like the stereotypical ingredients of training montages at the time. And it's like, what's even better about, like, you know, putting in like the eagle and shit like that. It's like, every other training montage, like, I would have been really interested if they would have taken kind of the side-by-side look like they did in Rocky, where you see I'm Drago training and then you see fucking Sly, like what the two of them are doing simultaneously to prep for this. When, you know, obviously Drago's like got all the machines and it's very like, you know, we're continuing to build this man is a machine, like we're gonna build him using the latest technology. Meanwhile, fucking Rocky's like throwing around logs and shit, you know, like it would have been cool to see like the dichotomy between the two of them. But I think, right. I think in general, anytime I was thinking about this when I was watching, I was like, I would have loved, because I got to imagine that the majority of this was shot on location either in Thailand for the majority of it or entirely in Thailand. And I would have loved to have been a fly on the inside of that stinky fucking strip club just to see what it's like to see fucking Jean-Claude toting around the countryside and or city with this film crew and how much chaos that caused in and of itself.
Oh, I can only imagine.
But no, dude, montage. What's great about it too is like his facial, like his mannerisms, like as he's training. I know that like there's the, you know, the Jean-Claude meme of him like yelling or whatever. Like that's his face has been featured in plaster and memes for a long time now. But like I just love his faces throughout this whole thing, because whether it's him tied down being forcibly split up the crotch or fucking whatever, it's like it's always great to see, because if it's not him yelling, it's just his face. Everyone's sweating in this fucking movie, by the way. I also wanted to mention that, like the hotter wardrobe, fucking, the wardrobe alone,
not anything you can imagine. It's got to be so fucking hot. Everyone's sweating. They're either, they just got revenge on their mind and they're sweating from that, or they're just sweating from that fucking putrid Bangkok heat.
Yep. The pink pussy fucking also has got to be exceptionally warm inside. I can only imagine.
Oh, I can only imagine. It probably fucking smells like fucking a farm out on Whitelaw Road.
I mean, they definitely built what Thailand and Bangkok was probably like, you know, I mean, I'm sure it's still like a pretty wild in some areas, but they definitely, the setting and the backdrop of the whole film, like really, you felt sticky and disgusting and hot while you're watching some of those scenes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, for more than one reason. Also, dude, when they're fucking, I don't know, when I die, if I die before any of you guys, I want you to ensure that there is someone playing a bamboo flute at my fucking wake, because I have been obsessed with bamboo flutes since Zion was playing it while you had Kurt dunked underwater doing fucking like all the maneuvers, all the like little punch dance shits while he's pegged at the bottom and he's just playing the bamboo flute.
Listen, we can definitely get a bamboo flute player. You heard it here first, folks. That is that's one of your last wishes. It shall be carried out for whoever's the surviving members.
I did.
Also, if you're big into flutes, you should check out Andre 3000's fucking flute album. It's fucking bonkers, dude.
Did you just play a flute for the whole album?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or one.
Yeah. Just...
Wow. It's a bamboo flute?
I don't know too much about the historicity and or the intricacies of what flutes, but let's just put it this way. It is a flute. It's more flute heavy than a fucking Jethro Tull record. Let's just put it that way. Like, it's insane, dude. It's nuts.
Flute heavy. Eric, tell us about the kicking of the fucking tree. Is this not the best and most brutal scene?
That's how you measure how your training is going and how strong you become. It's just the sheer fact that you kicking a fucking tree, a bamboo tree, kicking a fucking post in a room, and just killing your fucking shins. Like I said, the primitive training in this was what killed me, and with the back and forth with him and the guy who's training him, which his name escapes me, but
yeah,
that was another cool part of all that. Yeah, like that little dude just fucking bitching him around, fucking making him stretch on the bamboo, kick the shit out of these bamboo. Just great scenes, you know?
All right, gentlemen, we've finally gotten to that part of the movie, the infamous bar scene. he's wearing the Dockers, but he's also wearing like a muscle shirt, but there's
straps.
It's straps. It's like, it's almost like the overall, like, connector pieces on it.
One, dude, that's gotta be a fucking unitard. That's gotta be fucking
it probably is that he's wearing under there. That's a pro move.
Uh-huh.
You're going to drink in front of all the little Bangkok girls and you're wearing that. And you're just like, listen, I'm half a Dockers button and two fucking clicks of each strap down away from getting hot and sweaty with the bugs and you and the fucking outside of the back of this bar with fucking Zion hitting the fucking going hashtag flute heavy.
I'm sure JCVD cleaned up while I was there. I'm sure he just had, they were all over, I'm sure.
Oh, he got movies. Several shots of penicillin when he got back for more than one reason. But he intentionally, Zion gets him drunk on some fucking Goofy Liquor. Hashtag Goofy.
Tastes like death or whatever the fuck he said to him.
And then goes around and gets him and picks the girls up and was like, here, dance with this fucking European white boy. And then proceeds to go around the bar and tell everyone, like, listen, this guy said that you were a big old fucking pussy. And he's going to steal all your girls. So you better get over there and get fucking flute heavy. And then I like that everyone's just, all the guys are kind of watching him make it like, you know, dancing with the girls, dropping it fucking low. No one really tries to take action until he does the split and does the ass shake. And then they did the typical like older guy in a Beavis and Butthead episode. Like, wait a goddamn minute.
Crossed the line, my man. That's what that was. That crossed some boundaries on that one.
You can dance. You're not splitting and shaking though, pal.
Nope.
Now, and then he fights off the entire fucking bar. I love the slow-mo of the kicks when he's kicking them through the fucking wood into, also the ambiance of this bar is just fucking, it's second to none. We got flowing fucking water on the floors. this looks like the first version of Kodo in Carousel. It looks amazing.
Let's just put it this way. There were no OSHA posters hanging in the fucking employee break room at this goddamn fucking establishment. That's for goddamn sure.
Oh, no. And obviously he cleans him up. And then of course, you know, he's outside and Zion's then pressuring Freddie Lee and telling him, like, listen, we're ready for your bitch ass. And we're ready for old fucking goddamn quiche face fucking Tong Po, too.
I really enjoy Jean-Claude's like drunk acting too. Dude, it was so funny when he sits back down at the table. Like this scene particularly sticks out. He sits back down at the table. This dude runs at him. He brushes off the shit off the table where they were previously eating. And he like takes the littlest sip of whatever the fuck that mysterious brown liquid is. Another dude runs at him and simultaneously as he's sitting down proceeds to fucking throw that dude away. It was so fucking funny. And then when he's outside, he's like, where did you go? He's like, what did you tell those people? And he's like, I told them you wanted to steal their ladies and their mother slept with animals or whatever the fuck. So fucking good. So good.
That's great when the first guy or the guy comes over to like and puts his hands on the table and Van Damme like clears each side of his hand and the guy falls face first on the thing and he does the little ear clap on him.
So good. Fucking so good.
It's a moment of Jackie Chan drunken master.
Oh yeah, he went full rocks on. So Kurt gets an exhibition fight and whips this guy, and we get his nickname. Kurt gets his nickname Nuk Soo Kao. Also, this is the easiest crowd to win over ever. Tell me these people aren't like it's North Korea and they're fucking have no fucking power after 6 a.m. because of the fucking warlord and Freddie Lee. That they're so fucking easily swayed by one exhibition fight. They're like, like Mali can just get a Nuk Soo Kao chant going, and the entire fucking auditorium's fucking the White Warrior. All the fucking show, we're fucking on it. Flute heavy.
Heal the baby.
Yeah, heal the.
Yeah, huge turn. Huge turn.
Went full fucking baby face. Everyone's in on Nuk Soo Kao. Also, I've had a kickboxer tattoo idea for a long time, and it involved putting Nuk Soo Kao on me. But for obvious reasons in our climate now, it's probably not a good idea to get something in the Thailand. What's the language in Thailand?
Thai.
It's Thai. In Thai, I probably shouldn't get something that says "White Warrior" on me.
That might get translated a little wrong. That guy's got says White Warrior across his chest.
Wait, to be fair though, if it's in a different language, shouldn't they be like, they'd probably be more confused than anything, unless they're a kickboxer fan, and then they would fucking dab.
Well, you would have to put it in like quotes and then put dash kickboxer below it, and then you'd be fine.
From kick.
Yeah. You'd have to do what Michael Scott did. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Yeah. Gretzky dash Michael Scott. But the easiest crowd in the history of fucking any combat sports to win over immediately. Instant babyface, as Charlie said. And so then we get their traditional fight. We see Eric pissed, though, when he sees that his brother's in the magazine and getting like, is it, did you guys take that as he's pissed because his brother's getting the accolades of a kickboxer, like a famous kickboxer now, and he'll never be, or more mad that he's going to end up fighting Tong Po and could possibly get hurt, or is it a mix of both?
I think he's
mad. I got more jealousy. I got more like he was jealous and yeah, like he, you know, he's pissed because where he is.
I'm feeling
the injured. Jealous. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking, because he didn't expound upon it. He didn't try to be a prick and just be like, you motherfucker, you're supposed to be paralyzed, you European half-brother fuck.
Ballet kick, fuck.
You leotard fucking wearing motherfucker. but Freddie Lee has got so much bones about him, he goes to the warlord and borrows a cool mill to put up for Tong Po. And they get delivered the ancient fight tradition where they get, you know, one of the guys to come fucking in a little kimono and do the fucking, you know, bring the fucking, I guess it's the fucking invite to the fight. And it's going to be fought traditionally. So they don't fight in a coliseum or an arena or anything even as esteemed as a stadium or anything like that. But they go into like a fucking crypt, a legit fucking fight tomb. That's traditionally where they had all the old fights. And they're going to be fighting with fucking their hands dipped in glue and broken glass.
Jesus.
And obviously, I think Freddie Lee is concerned because then he kidnaps Kurt, injures the dog. Like,
yeah.
You've just crossed the line to a new level when you start hurting the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And bring Tong Po, Mali, Xian's daughter, the love interest or niece, the love interest of Kurt, and Tong Po rapes her. So if they weren't getting it across, they're heinous, evil motherfuckers.
That's about as dark as it gets.
Yeah, it don't get much darker.
It does not. It does not.
That's where it has more gravity than the story of Bloodsport, too. Is that
yeah,
when it really comes down?
There's to legit the odds, not just pride.
There's more at stake.
What's it's also like, I like that they didn't include the actual like rape scene. And I feel like it carries a lot more weight when they don't show it. And you're like, what the fuck happened? And then he confirms it where he's like, you bleed just like my lay or whatever. He's like, you know, and it's like, oh shit. Like he definitely raped her like 100% definitely. It was you could conclude that after he, you know, rips her shirt or whatever, like when he's right. Brought in front of her and the dude, he licks his fucking broken ass teeth in front. It's just the most grimy fucking sequence. But it's like, I like when they don't include shit like that because your mind wanders. Not that I like my mind wandering about that, but it hits the point home even more when you don't show the thing that's terrible. And it's like, now I'm thinking about it and that's horrible. Like it's just when directors choose to take that route, I don't know. I just, that speaks volumes, like, and it brings more gravity to it, to an already fucked up situation, you know?
Yeah. Tom Savini famously says it too. He says, you know, a lot of the times I'll pull back and I won't show stuff because your imagination is going to paint it worse than anything I'm going to be able to put on screen.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's definitely truth to that.
In a less is more type thing. I think it's the most memorable part of the film is the dunking of the hand, the wrapped glued hands in the broken glass.
Mm-hmm. Like, and then he fucking licks it, dude.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. The licking.
He's no bitch. I mean, he's a bitch for being a rapist, but like, right. He's obviously a heinous, evil, hard motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
But that,
no, they did a great job with that. That was fucking, it looked cool too. Like the whole lead up where it's like, it's zoomed in on the glass. You got the fucking, like they're packing down fucking asphalt on Lewis Point Road, like in the middle of the summer because the plows destroyed it. Like they're showing that. And then it's put in a box, they shake it around. Like there's a whole process. Like I really enjoyed seeing that element of it too, where it's like, no, we're fighting traditional. It's like, okay, what does that mean? It's like, we will show you. And as you said, Jesse. Yeah. They're bringing him into a crypt where they used to fight, like traditional fights used to occur. Like, and then there's this whole other like pomp and circumstance associated with that. Like, I always like when they delve a little bit from like the, I don't know, the norm or what. Oh yeah, they're just in another Coliseum again. Like, no, right. This is like a legit fucking, this is the premier fight, you know, and we're not doing it. This isn't a pay-per-view event. You know, you got to fucking know someone who knows someone who fucking sells weapons or some shit to get in, you know?
Yeah.
The scene with the glass, like, really builds the weight of the situation and how, like, how dangerous and fucked up it is. Mm-hmm. And you know what I mean?
That's why I've always said that Kickboxer is the dark, seedy version of Bloodsport. It is the darker version of that, because Bloodsport, for the most part, is pretty upbeat. Like, obviously, Ray Jackson, like, that character, you know, it tugged on your heartstrings with Ray in that portion of the film. But for the most part, it's more like edge of your seat, like excited to see how this plays out and stuff. There's legit heinous shit that happens in Kickboxer that, if he didn't need any more revenge, like an idea of like why he wanted revenge with his brother getting paralyzed, this guy then rapes his, you know, his would-be girlfriend, stabs fucking his trainer's dog. And luckily, we get Winston Taylor comes and saves the day with Zian and rescues Eric. And is that not a great scene where they play the like little synthy hero military music where he comes in? Like, that is the one of the more feel good moments of the movie.
So I wanted to mention this, and I don't want to plug another movie while we're talking about this, but
no, plug away.
So you mentioned like the seedy dark shit associated not only with kickboxing but in Thailand. Has anyone, I'm assuming at least one of you guys, have you guys seen fucking Only God Forgives?
Ryan Gosling?
Yes.
Yeah, Nicholas Winding Refn and
yep.
Gosling, yep.
Yeah, I think I only saw it once, but yes.
So that also takes place in Thailand. It also revolves around a brother getting, well, in this case, the brother gets murdered, spoiler or whatever, but like that really exposes, it shows a lot about, I think that was more like, that might have been Muay Thai as well. As like his brother was a fighter and Gosling ran like a dojo or whatever, like a fighting outfit, but it deals with the criminal aspect of Thailand as well, not unlike this. And it's like, I'm not saying like, I'm wondering if Refn was like a kickboxer fan, because there are some fairly stark similarities between the two, other than like the mom getting involved in the weird like incest shit or whatever that's in there. I definitely got some vibes of that, where it's like you said, like this is a seedier version. This is a seedier look at, and one could argue maybe a more serious look at, like what we saw in Bloodsport. It's like in Only God Forgives, it's like it takes it almost a step even further, a more modernized look at that, because it does revolve around fighting as well. It was just, I saw some similarities, if not just from like the location and some of the themes in there as well, because that's also a revenge film too. But
I'm gonna have to rewatch that, because I only watched it once and I only vaguely remember it. So, but good call on that.
It's not my favorite NWR movie, but like it's still, there's some creepy fucking sequences in there for sure. Like, just his cinematography is fucking unreal and the score is great, but yeah. Dude, some weird shit like in that movie, like dark, like really dark shit.
I can guarantee sure. that. I can guarantee he's a fan of Kickboxer. Refn, I mean, I can almost guarantee it. But yeah, I mean, that movie, I thought it was great, but yeah, I know it got a lot of hate, but
you didn't see
I
it.
I definitely see what you're saying. So.
I'm going to have to check it out.
Yeah, I'm going to have to revisit that, because I only vaguely remember it. But good call out on that one, Lou. But as the movie wraps here, we get him beating the ever-loving shit and piss out of Tong Po. And a very satisfying end for Tong Po. And then Freddie Lee gets his, too. Because, you know, even though he gives Freddie Lee a swift kick, Freddie Lee's in a million large to fucking Bangkok Kim Jong.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a fucking another Stan Bush. Never surrender. Just a fucking, and I love that you have like Winston going, yeah, yeah. All right. It gives you a feel good ending to this fucking great film known as Kickboxer. What, you know, we'll go around the table and we'll start with Charlie. Overall, give me your overall feelings and how you feel about Kickboxer after, especially after a rewatch. Obviously, Lou was a first time watch, but like, sum her up for me and your feelings of where it stands, either in fight film or just your general thoughts on where this one ranks, either amongst his or just in films in general. It's enjoyability, rewatchability, it's up there, right?
Absolutely. I think that it is, maybe it's a little less iconic than Bloodsport, right, but it has so much more to offer from a story perspective, and it really helps you dive deep into the setting and everything. They have the great montages that we were talking about, and the story, it really sells you on the point that Jean-Claude's character, Kurt, is this recreated hero that has the things that his brother was missing, bringing to the fight.
For sure.
He has a cool head. He's not coming into it overconfident, and he's defending his brother's honor. I think it has a very cool story.
Yeah, I think that's what stands out. I've always thought that too, because I've definitely seen people be like, oh, it's fucking dumb 80s, like, movie, Jean-Claude movies, all like he can't act and stuff like that. One, I do think his acting is really good in this. I think everybody's acting in this is really good. I don't think anybody is like embarrassingly B-movie acting in this.
Very convincing.
Yeah, I think it's all very, very good. But what about you, Eric? And then we'll go to Lou, since it was his first time watching. I'd like to get his after I get yours. So overall, what's your thoughts upon, you know, just seeing this as over and over as many times as you have, and where does it rank amongst some of your favorites as far as the genre goes?
For sure. I mean, Charlie's tough to follow there. He put that very, very, very nice. But yeah, I mean, in the pantheon of action films, you know, films that I think about that are some of the greatest, this is definitely one of them. I mean, maybe that's a nostalgic thing, but like you said, the storytelling, just the vibe of Jean-Claude's movies as well. This one being one of his better movies right there with Bloodsport, to me, it's iconic. And if I was going to pitch, you know, someone who's like, oh, what are like the 10 or whatever action movies I need to watch, this movie would definitely be there. I think for some reason, like you said, people kind of downplay the acting in these movies, but I think the storytelling is great, the action is great, and Jean-Claude himself is one of the most iconic actors of the genre, so one of my faves.
Now, Lou, first time watch for you, and you've already kind of solidified your thoughts of its rewatchability, the rewatchability factor, but overall thoughts, first time viewing, and everything encompassing the film.
So I actually have a couple questions for Charlie when I get done with this like very short diatribe. One thing I really enjoyed about this, I like watching actors when they're in their first basically handful of films, and to really see like kind of how they grow as an actor. Like if you put this alongside, I mean, you could even put it alongside like a Conan or like Commando, if we're talking like Arnold's like first foray into actual like films and roles and stuff, and to see like a younger Jean-Claude when he's still can't quite shake his accent, and he's playing an American again, and like it's cool to see that growth from start to finish, like start of their career and closer towards like not the end but the latter part. I would say that this, you know, this definitely ranks up there. This does, as I had mentioned, rewatchability is great, but I think what I enjoyed about this too, as both Eric and Charlie had said, like this is the storytelling piece is really, I think the one of the big takeaways is great sequences, great montages, but it really, I don't know, it stands on its own. Like it, same kind of thing. It's like, if I were to pitch like this movie to someone, it's like, okay, do you like action movies? Yes, of course. Have you ever seen Kickboxer? No. Well, you're going to get the sights, sounds, and smells of Thailand. You're going to get a younger JCVD. basically working to solidify and establish himself as an action juggernaut. And you're also going to get some really fucking badass, not stereotypical, but you're going to get everything that you would have gotten from an 80s action flick as well. The score is great. The soundtrack's awesome. And the montages are there. Like, it's just all the ingredients to make it like, yeah, this is a great fucking movie. So that's kind of, that is that. So Charlie, I have two questions for you, because we talked about this on the Seagal episode that we did out for Justice. But first thing is, when you were growing up, and this is just a quick, like, yes or no thing, I'm gonna throw two questions at you. When we were talking about kind of how we grew up, and because we were exposed to these films via our fathers, you tend to get put into camps with action stars, whether it's Seagal, whether it's Jean-Claude, whether it's Stallone, Arnold. Where did you sit in that, if you had to pick one, or if maybe you weren't part of that? But I was curious from that perspective, where, what camp you were in at a young age. But the second thing is, we also talked about, we kind of pontificated on, like, why aren't there action movies anymore in the way that we had them for so long? And we talked about that, and I'd like to get your perspective on that. But yeah, sorry to throw two fucking questions at you. I'm curious.
Well, so growing up, it'd be tough to answer, because in my household, I feel like it was neck and neck, 1A and 1B were Arnold and Sylvester Stallone. It was Predator, Rocky, Commando, all the hits.
Yeah. They were obviously, not to take anything away from Seagal or JCVD, but Arnold and Stallone are arguably were the one and two, and then the next tier was Seagal and Van Damme. As much as I was a true Van Damme film, I was a fan of everybody. But yeah, they were the one and two. They were the biggest of the big, you know?
I would say if it was between Seagal and Jean-Claude Van Damme, it'd probably be more leaning toward Jean-Claude Van Damme in my household. And I really don't think that action movies take off quite as well today, because they don't have the same kind of story building. And if you look at Kickboxer, it has all of the gravity of a good action film without a single gunshot being fired. It's just it's pure fighting,
right?
There's still the element of death, there's still all of the things that are involved with, you know, a movie with every type of explosion and gun in it. And I just feel like they aren't building the stories for these action heroes in a way that's at all relatable. You know, in this story, it's really just a guy who is trying to look out for his brother's pride as a champion kickboxer and kind of prove himself a little bit too. I feel like a lot of the movies that are made today, they kind of lack that relatability, where the hero is kind of almost too unrealistic in a way.
No, it's true. As much as, and that's the thing too, as much as I love the Expendables, I think that you might be onto something there, because obviously it's like a collective of like the biggest stars in the industry in those movies that are all like, they're all like mercenaries working for a thing. That's cool and everything, but there is a little bit of hard to believe. There's a believability factor that factors into those. Now I'm only saying that because those are the only action films that stand out. And they only stand out because they're super fun, but there's all those stars in them too. And I feel like that's the only way you can get an action franchise and or film in general, get us attracted to it, is like, you got to get all the guys that we grew up watching in on it to enjoy it. As far as like newer ones, you're not really getting it.
They're not building heroes.
No.
They don't have the guy that does all the action movies. I mean, there are some, but...
Do you think it's a... This is probably going to come off wrong. But do you think there's like a... Hollywood in general, I think we can agree. I think there's also a fear of coming off as, you know, some of these action films that are reminiscent of the 80s coming off as too toxic male, too. Mm. I think they're afraid to step over a line where it's like, it's too over the top, or it's too like, I'm fighting for my brother's pride. I feel like someone could easily watch Kickboxer and gloss over the fact that like Kurt Sloan was raised by his mother. He took ballet, you know, there's a sensibility there where they could drop, you know, a common guy would drop the F word on him because he took ballet and stuff. And I feel like they would write kick people on the surface would write Kickboxer off and not understand that they actually bring elements in. They just don't. It's not the focal point of the story. There's little elements like that. So if anybody said, like, oh, Kickboxer's too toxic male, I'd be like, well, the main character was took ballet in Europe, and his brother's the macho American guy, and you get his sensitivity and his sensibilities through the film. I feel like those things were always in 80s films, but they were not the focal point. So but the fact that those things aren't focal points, I think that's why you don't see action movies today, is because something like that would probably have to be the focal point for the studio to be able to sell it to, or anybody to sell it to the studio to want to make it, because there could be instantly be backlash for a plethora of things. And I think it's just, I think we live in a time where kids are on their phones and stuff like that. Like we've all talked about it, like watching the action movies with your dad or your brothers or your fucking or your uncle or whoever. Like I watched them with my cousin, my dad, my uncle. There was like a male bonding thing when you watch like action movies. And I don't think that there's a lot of that going on now. It's more so go in your room, do your homework on your iPad, and get on social media or do whatever, or play Fortnite or whatever the kids do is their outlet these days. But there's not that like human connectivity. Like, let's get a pizza and some wings and fucking watch Kickboxer. Though you fucking got to see this fucking guy Tong Po. I feel like that's just not conversations that kids are having now. And I think it's directly correlated to lack of, you know, kids not having physical media, because the tape, VHS tape was everything in our day.
Mm-hmm.
It was the crown.
That's your selection.
Yeah, that was your selection. And you had limited selection.
I think you bring up a good point, Charlie, too, about, and as well, Jesse, with the like toxic masculinity or things being misconstrued or read too much into. And it's like, if you, in going to the point that you had made, Charlie, about nothing is seemingly grounded or relatable. It's like, if you take a look at, because in that Seagal episode, we talked about, we posited like, okay, well, let's look at what the successful action franchises are nowadays. And it's like Expendables, Mission Impossible, the Fast and the Furious franchise, I guess, like, and even like John Wick to a degree. It's like those, maybe with the exception of John Wick, those other three that I mentioned that are still successful, they're still making movies in some way, shape, or form. They're going to the, you know, to the theaters, but like, there's not necessarily things that are grounded in those. They're so over the top. They're so like bonkers, which right. is fine. They're fun popcorn movies and stuff, but like, I guess you could also put John Wick into there. The only relatable thing is his dog died and he wanted to carry out vengeance upon like the mob, but he's also a contract killer who's part of this criminal underworld. Like, so it's like nothing is really grounded at all anymore. And so I think you might be onto something with that, where it's like it has to be so fucking crazy for this to get off the ground. Maybe it's they don't feel that the studios don't feel these are viable options, to your point, Jesse, because kids aren't fucking, they're not having those conversations. They're not going to Chinango Video and hitting up fucking Roma's for pizza on fucking Friday night, and you know, like, and then going home and watching it with their buddies or their dad or whatever. It's a different environment. So it sucks. I would hope that there would be a tilt, like, you know, we'd also talked about, and you know, other podcasters have lamented about this, but it's like now we're seeing this overindulgence and oversaturation of the horror franchise, the horror genre. So it's like, I don't know if the pendulum will swing back in another direction, or if it's, for the time being, it's always going to be over the top. You know, it's always going to be extreme, because you could even put that into the realm of like war movies. Like, yeah. Fuck, I don't even, I know that there's some fuck that's me. Well, actually, it's like, all right, well, I don't know when the last time a true war movie was put out.
One, you know what I mean? Like, really popular, we'll say that.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that is one thing I'd share with Jesse. Like, that was part of my upbringing, is I watched a lot of action movies, but a lot of war movies. That was because my grandfather's. And, like, so I also had that exposure. So it's like, nowadays, it's like, I don't know, maybe it's just, you know, not saying that, like, war movies are great, because they oftentimes glorify seemingly, well, realistically tragic incidents, but we just, that's, I don't know. I don't know if it's not part of the culture anymore, or people don't want to see it. I don't know what the answer is, but definitely might be onto something with that, where it's, just, you know, it's not a viable source of income. Like, we need to make it so crazy so people latch onto it and it's fun, you know?
Yeah, it's I think maybe stuff that's more realistic is scary for younger audiences now. You got to make it like, you know, that's why the Marvel and, you know, comic worlds have blown up so much, because you can escape and it, you don't have to worry about the real shit. So that's what I think anyways. My take on Kickboxer is fantastic story. My favorite Van Damme movie. Grew up. This is a top five film for me ever of any genre. Many memories attached to this. Love it so much. Just perfect execution. It's a evil, seedy movie in some aspects, but it's still like a feel-good movie nostalgia-wise because of the ending and just the memories and the nostalgia attached to it. It's just so fucking cool. So fucking fun. And I love that there's lore behind it, like the whole Michelle Kissy thing too, like him, you know, being Moroccan and being, you know, of Arab descent, and the producer not wanting to work with an Arab. So then fucking Stan Winston, who created the Terminator and did the fucking makeup in Aliens, like ends up doing the makeup on him. And the dude ends up getting the job because he looks fucking good. Like, Stan Winston's a fucking freedom fighter.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking love it. I love hearing it. And stuff like that. And like, you know, we just waxed about this film fucking for as long as we did. I mean, it speaks to how fun it is. And I'm pumped right now, Lou, you just found this movie. So like, you know, in 8 months or a year and a half, when someone's just like, if someone comes over to your place or something, they're just like, let's watch something. You know, you're at one point, you're going to be like, yo, have you seen fucking Kickboxer? Because I got this fucking steelbook I just got from Walmart. And wait till you see fucking Tong Po, my friend.
You use the term quiche-faced motherfucker, and I don't think that description's going anywhere in my brain. That's stuck, dude. That's stuck.
But yeah, just a fucking fantastic movie. So, is anybody... besides myself, is anybody putting Kickboxer over Bloodsport? I mean, Lou, it's a little early for you because you just discovered this.
I'm gonna say no. For me, I would put Bloodsport over. But I do have a question. I do have a question for the group.
What?
Well, I mean, I'll let everyone talk first. It's another kind of Jean-Claude related question. So I'll wait till after.
No, go ahead.
Well, we talk about how Bloodsport and Kickboxer are 1-2s. I just was curious what everyone's like. What would be your next Jean-Claude Van Damme movie?
Ooh.
After Kickboxer and Bloodsport?
Yeah, like, you know, saying that if those two are 1 and 2, which for me, obviously, yeah, Bloodsport 1 and Kickboxer 2, what would be everyone's third?
This is easy.
If they had one.
This is super easy. Actually, it's hard.
See, I know, I do know mine. I do know mine because I've seen it more than all of them, dude. Universal Soldier, dude.
It's tough.
I'm caught between Universal Soldier, which is another film that, like, the movie poster is fucking burned in my memory from it hanging at Sight and Sound Video in Canastota. It's fucking burned there, and I remember it reading to me like a horror film. I knew it was an action film. But to me, it always read as a horror movie, especially when Dolph Lundgren had the fucking ear necklace and he goes, I'm all ears. it's been burned in my mind. My other instant answer is Double Impact, because Double Impact was another one of those films. I fucking vividly remember eating fucking Dominic's pizza and watching that motherfucking movie incessantly with my cousin, my uncle, and my father.
So it's tough. I mean, Double Impact is another one that's like, I feel like right there. I don't feel like it's talked about, but it's kind of, I really like the movie, the film Lionheart with him. I think that's a nostalgia thing. I think
yours, Charlie? Lionheart?
I was actually going to say Lionheart as well.
Yeah, that's a great flick as well.
Lionheart, Death Warrant, fucking.
Dude, Time Cop.
I love Time Cop.
Time Cop's so great.
Let's not forget sudden death. Obviously, Lance hockey. It's got it all.
The Penguins
filmed in Pittsburgh too.
Yeah.
I gotta go Universal Soldier.
Yeah.
I gotta is behind Kickboxer and Bloodsport. I mean, it's probably irrefutable that it's actually I might put Universal Soldier.
Whoa.
That's blasphemy.
Wow.
Blasphemy? You hate Dolph Lundgren.
I knew that was gonna be your next. No, I don't hate it. I just think that's a hot take. It's a very hot take.
Maybe I'm just trying to be edgy. I don't know. I do have a Bolo Young signed Bloodsport poster fucking 3 feet from Charlie and I, so maybe that is blasphemy. Maybe you're right. I rescind my
think about your interaction with Bolo and tell me that you'd have had the same one with Dolph.
Dolph, I feel like, might be a little bit more chipper than Bolo. Bolo went straight Tong Po on me.
He just crushed up a pill and threw it in your eye and then signed it.
Yeah, so that's a good one. So Charlie said Lionheart. Eric said Lionheart. Lou and me and Lou both said Universal Soldier.
Fuck yeah.
That's solid. All right. As we wrap this up, is there a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie to our listeners that you would recommend, not Bloodsport or Kickboxer? Obviously, we recommend Kickboxer, just did an episode on it. But is there a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie that you would recommend to someone that hasn't seen it because you think it's kind of a little unsung or maybe just not in the forefront of his films?
Yeah. I'll go first, make it quick. I would recommend Street Fighter, if not because it's has nothing to do with the game at all, other than there's fighting and characters and likeness. The story is fucking ridiculous. It's Raul Julia's last fucking film, so you get to see him as M. Bison, looking fucking badass as fuck. Love the uniform, but it's a fun, bonkers ass movie. And I would highly recommend for anyone who hasn't seen it and sat through the fucking hour and whatever, 48 minutes of that trash heap, to just do yourself a favor, you know, sit down, get a big ass bowl of popcorn and fucking check it out, because it's fun as fuck. And I really wish that Jean-Claude would have had a prosthetic blonde flat top as Guile, but that didn't occur. But the movie's fun as shit. So it's a good watch.
They did give him that sick hair. They dyed his hair though.
They gave him that goddamn Sylvan Beach amusement park fucking, you know, temporary tattoo, American flag tattoo on his fucking bicep. So that worked.
So good.
What about you, Eric?
I guess just for my pure love of hockey, I'm going to say Sudden Death. I think that movie doesn't get talked about a lot, and I think it's a pretty cool concept.
Yeah.
I mean, he also shoots up as a goalie at one point. I mean, come on. Who doesn't love Jean-Claude as a goalie?
That one, Sudden Death, is very, very underrated. And I might need to revisit that one soon because I haven't watched it in a few years.
Who's the villain in that? Is it Powers Booth, that dude? Is he the villain in that movie? Or am I thinking of a different flick? I'll have to look that up.
Powers Booth of fucking Tombstone fame? Is Powers Booth in fucking Tombstone as well?
He is, yep. That's him. I think he plays a villain in Sudden Death. I could be wrong about that, though.
I've never seen that. And you guys talking about it, it makes me want to fucking watch this now. I honestly, Sudden Death, I was just thinking it was another spinoff, like, mixed martial arts movie, you know, like, yeah, but it's about hockey.
That's Powers Booth. I didn't realize that Powers Booth died in 2017.
No shit.
Rest in peace. Jeez.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. fucking P.
My recommendation on the other side of the coin for Jean-Claude Van Damme would be Double Team with Dennis Rodman.
I'm gonna second that, because that is what I would say too. Because Double Team's a 90s flick, a late 90s. I remember the fucking hype when this was coming out, because this is Dennis Rodman in the Bulls era. Super fucking, like, I remember how jacked up I was as a Chicago Bulls fan to see Jean-Claude and fucking Dennis Rodman in the fucking thing. Also, there's a great scene where Van Damme, change his identity, peels his fingerprints with a knife off his fingers.
Nice. Dude, talk about fucking movie posters seared into my brain. I feel like every time I saw that cover, I was like, God damn, that looks fucking awesome. That looks badass.
I like how they 100% didn't have to give Dennis Rodman any kind of, they're like, just do you. Act like you're in Vegas.
Act like you're in Vegas or North Korea. It'll be a breeze for you.
100%. So Charlie says double team. I would say double team too. But another movie I like is called Desert Heat. Another 90s film. Hilarious fucking cover. Just him on a motorcycle. And like there's like the heat waves like on it. It's a fucking great film. They're all great films, let's be real. But yeah, this is another Van Damme movie in the books. We've done Bloodsport. Now we've done Kickboxer. We've done Universal Soldier. Maybe Double Impact's next, because Jean-Claude Van Damme may have to get credit for doing what Eddie Murphy did years later with playing multiple characters in a film on the same screenshot, too. So... But yeah, final thoughts on Kickboxer, go fucking check it out and go to Walmart and get the fucking Steelbook, Blu-ray, cherish the villain that is Tong Po, old Quiche Face himself. But fucking shout out to Michelle Kissy, who was fucking awesome as Tong Po. And yeah, don't, you can view it your own discretion, I guess, checking out the Kickboxer sequels, which feature a third Sloan brother that is unmentioned in the first film. Not bad films, not bad. And you do see Tong Po return, but obviously nothing like Jean-Claude Van Damme, but hey, they're entertaining as well. But yeah. Yeah, this one's been a fucking blast, guys. We gotta get some more of these episodes in, because, this one was fun having the four of us on talking Kickboxer, and hopefully someone watches Kickboxer now per this show or revisits it per this recommendation via the show. So yeah, fucking Kickboxer, gents.
Hell yeah, a lot of fun, man. A lot of fun, guys.
Love it.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. All right, you can check us out at Heart Guide Media on Instagram and let us know that you're listening. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all that shit. Rate, review, comment, like, all that shit at Heart Guide Media. Watch fucking Kickboxer, listen to Stan Bush, and kick a fucking pillar in the underground fucking Coliseum.